From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Maureen McCullum. Native American arts and crafts and historical artifacts are popular with many people and can be a major source of income for many Native American tribes. But because of the popularity, there's also an underground market that's trying to capitalize by ripping off Native tribes or even make a profit by looting artifacts. The federal government created the Indian Arts and Crafts Act in 1990 to help protect tribes from underground profiteers. I recently talked with U.S. Department of Interior Officer Bob Palmer and UW La Crosse Archaeology Professor and Mississippi Valley Archaeology Center Executive Director Dr. Joe Tiffany about the issue.
In one sense, it's an enormously big issue for American Indians. And I say that in terms of trafficking of modern items. There's something called the Indian Arts and Crafts Act, which is meant to protect modern American Indian artists so they can produce things, sell them as being Indian made. And a lot of these things that are being made by these different tribal people have very ancient origins. And so they make things like jewelry, they make baskets, make Sioux Star quilts, things like that. And so then they'll take those and they'll sell those to vendors who then on-sell them to the public. And in many cases, that's the only source of income these people have. And so the Indian Arts and Crafts Act, as I like to say, is a law that is at the top of the cliff as opposed to the bottom of the cliff. And that if that's enforced, that allows economic activity on the reservations out in Indian country. It allows for people to make have sources of income, as opposed to when those sources of income are removed because things are being brought in from, say, China or the Philippines that are counterfeit, they lose their income. And their unemployment rates in Indian country are very high, and the rates of poverty are very high, and the rates of domestic violence and alcoholism is high. And so this one law can be extremely important to a group of very vulnerable people.
And we're referring to some modern-day crafts. What about, ancient Native American artifacts, arrowheads?
There's a couple statutes in the United States law. One's called the Archaeological Resources Protection Act, and the other one is called the Native American Graves Repatriation Act as well. And those two acts are meant to protect things that are on the federal estate, on the public estate. Not only American Indian things, but also you can think in terms of Civil War things. Basically, under ARPA, or the Archaeological Resources Protection Act, anything over 100 years old that has an archaeological interest is protected. Well, in times when the economy is bad, quite often we find that on the federal estate, when people are unemployed and they don't have jobs, they will go out onto public lands and hunt these items. Sometimes for their own interest, but oftentimes to sell. And in some cases, they're actually doing that as directed by somebody who's looking for something specific. In different parts of the country, it's a very significant issue, and it's a very significant issue to us as a society, because these are the pieces of the tapestry that make up who we are as a country. And the volume of it is difficult to know. And one thing that we do know is that the General Accountability Office has done a couple of studies on this, and they've determined that over 3/4 of the archaeological sites in the southwestern part of the United States have been looted. When you kind of start to think about that, we're talking about a significant amount of materials and a significant loss of our cultural heritage. And some of these are multinational undertakings and involve a lot of people.
And Dr. Joe Tiffany is someone who handles many of these artifacts. I mean, do you see this as much of an issue in the La Crosse area?
One of the things we do provide a public education service. So I get emails every day, people walking off the street, what is it? What do I have here? And sometimes they have just broken rocks. Other times they walk in with beautiful projectile points, and they want to know the story about these. They want to know what it means. They've picked it up, or it's been in Grandpa, gave it to him in a cigar box, and that's all perfectly fine. We want to try and educate the public as best we can about what these material objects are and what they meant to the people who made them and how important they are to modern education. a spinoff of what Bob is talking about is many Americans don't realize it's against the law. There are people out with helicopters and they're trafficking and doing all kinds of stuff, but folks up fishing along the reservoirs in South Dakota, you know, pick up projectile points, pick up pottery. That's on federal land. They can't do that. And usually when you ask them, you realize you're breaking the law and put the stuff back down. So there's an ongoing educational issue here as well, on several different levels, because most people like to do the right thing, basically.
But if Grandpa found that piece of pottery, you know, in their barn when they built it 100 years ago on their land, what happens then?
It's theirs.
It's theirs.
If it's on private property, it belongs to the property owner. So that's the way it is basically in the United States, where the federal lands are collectively owned by all of us. So that's where permits are required and where removing materials can get you in a lot of trouble. But on the private side, a lot of folks who begin collecting don't realize, you know, that's private property. You have to ask people's permission, just like you would if you're hunting there. That's what I mean about it being an educational process.
Bob, can you talk about the fraudulent artifacts? And you mentioned that there are certain countries you see pieces will show up on Antiques Roadshow where someone thinks that they have, you know, a very valuable Native American artifact, but it turns out to be a fake.
Yes, I've worked a number of those cases. One in particular, which was just devastating, was there was this artist in New Mexico, and he made bracelets. And these weren't any kind of bracelets. These were amazing bracelets that he would work about 3 to 4 months on to produce. And he would sell these for about $5,000, which is a significant amount of money, but if you figured out the hourly rate, it's really not that high. Well, he would make one of these, and he would take this into a certain town to sell. And one year, he went in, and nobody would buy his bracelet. And so his wife thought, this is really odd. So she went around and started looking in the shops, and here was his bracelet. But it wasn't his. What it was a counterfeit bracelet that had been made, in that particular instance, had been made in the Philippines and was being brought in and being sold for, I think it was around, as I recall, it was around $1,000 or $2,000. And it was probably something that they were buying for $100 maybe. And what that meant to that individual is that just absolutely devastated their income. And not only do we find jewelry, but you find basketry, Navajo rugs, Sioux Star quilts, pottery, all sorts of stuff like that. That sort of thing goes on. So buyer beware. And there is a website. If someone is interested, just Google Indian Arts and Crafts Act or Indian Arts and Crafts Board, and that's the Department of the Interior office. And they try to help tribal people and tribal groups establish their marketing of their items to provide economic development for tribal areas. But it's a widespread problem. And it involves, in some cases, involves many, many players.
And you talked about the economic impact it can have on Native American cultures with, you know, the underground trade, but also the fraudulent items. I mean, what does it do psychologically or culturally with, you know, this trade going on?
Well, it's a double-edged sword, and neither edge is good, in that on one side you have the consumer who thinks that they're buying something from an American Indian that's Indian made, and they a lot of people put a lot of significance into things when they think they're buying an American Indian made craft, and when they find out that it's not, well, they feel like they've been taken, which they have, and they're upset. And on the other side of the equation, the tribal people, the artists who are attempting to make and sell their goods, are being undercut. And as a result, not only are these people, are they losing an economic aspect of their life, but we as a society are losing some incredibly beautiful and important aspects of our cultural history, some which have deep roots into prehistory. And these things, while they are created by these artists, they're things that belong to each and every one of us, whether we're Indian or not Indian. And they're the artwork that comes out of some of these communities is just unbelievable, and it's things that that we should all be proud of as Americans, that is part of our culture and society.
Is there any sense of how economically, can you put a dollar figure on how big of an industry this is?
Well, there have been some figures floating around with the Indian Arts and Crafts. I'm not sure how robust those figures are, but some of the figures I've heard have been in the neighborhood of a couple billion dollars of illegal trade.
Across the country?
Across the country, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's enormous. And in some cases, it's major corporations that have hands in this. There was an issue that started out here in the upper Midwest that had to do with Urban Outfitters here in the last mm-hmm. year, where they were marketing things and calling them Navajo panties and Navajo designed whiskey flasks and things like that, which was not popular with the Navajo Nation.
So if someone is caught selling a Native American artifact or producing fraudulent artifacts, what can happen to them, and are people ever prosecuted?
Funny you should bring that up.
Yes.
I was working on a case here recently where we did an undercover buy of someone who was making or selling art as being Indian made, which wasn't, and they've been indicted in federal court and face, I think it's up to 5 years in prison and up to a $250,000 fine. So it's real, and there are agencies, federal agencies, the FBI, Fish and Wildlife Service, National Park Service, that are actively involved in investigating these cases. So I would just encourage people that if they have an opportunity and have an interest in this sort of thing, travel into Indian country somewhere and do purchase something, make sure it's Indian made. And if it turns out that you've been taken, There are places that you can go to at least have something like that reviewed for an investigation.
Is that something that MVET can do? Can people bring artifacts here, or what can people do?
We'll always try to identify them. In many cases, especially with stone tools, you can't tell if they've been replicated or not, because something made last week looks the same as something 10,000 years old. But we try to work with folks. You know, where did you get the material? Did you buy this? Usually if it's bought, there's going to be some questions about its context, which is what we're after to find out if it's real or not. So we try to help them, try to educate them. Collecting's fun, but there's ways to do it that's legal and will actually get you a product that isn't a fake, basically.
Bob Palmer is a U.S. Department of Interior officer. Dr. Joe Tiffany is executive director of the Mississippi Valley Archaeology Center. I spoke with them about what's being done to slow the problem of Native American artifact trafficking. Thanks for listening to Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, I'm Maureen McCollum. Our production team includes John Gatto, Steve Roysom, Mary Meehan Stroob, and our senior news editor and producer, John Davis. To hear archives of this or other recent editions of Newsmakers, visit our website at wpr.org/lacrosse. In addition to Newsmakers, you'll find archived reports and special series produced by the La Crosse News Bureau. And if you'd like to comment on this week's Newsmakers or have a suggestion for future shows, you'll also find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/lacrosse. Newsmakers is also on Facebook. Updates on future shows, links to our archives, and more. Like us at WPR Newsmakers on Facebook.